I think because of the questions, some of the questions that we had before the break, I thought maybe I need to clarify maybe a little bit up, or maybe explain a little bit more. Another thing is that, of course, as we mentioned, we try our best not to make mistakes from the very beginning. Even in when you're trying to find a qualified guru, teachers, despite trying our best, sometimes we might end up in being guru and disciple relationship with maybe not so qualified teachers, gurus. It is possible, you know, it is possible. As we often find out, we do make mistakes and we don't have the right wisdom at the right time all the time. So then what happens? Then I think when we find we have already got in relationship with that as a guru, with someone as our guru, but then we find out that they are not actually not practicing themselves properly as they should be as a guru. So then I think in those cases, we try to physically distance ourselves. Still, you can keep in them because they have been a kind in our life to kind of introduce to the Dharma, or in a certain different way, they have helped us in that way. So we still remember those kindness, but now it is better for me to be physically not involved. Do you get it? So I think that is absolutely, again, fine. When it situation comes in such things. That is, and other things, I think what I often find is people tend to take so literally of what your teacher says, guru says, as though that. And again, that is, I think, again, I think there is a misunderstanding of that. Even in Sutra, it is clearly mentioned that if your teacher says something which is not, which is contradiction to the very foundation of the Dharma, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't listen to that, or shouldn't take that literally. So those are the things I think that we can keep in our mind. And also there is an explanation. If your guru asks you to do something which you are unable to perform it, you just clarify and explain. And that is, again, absolutely correct. It's not incorrect. Again, because I think sometimes I find, again, some students, it seems sometimes they make themselves more stressed out and burden themselves because their teacher has asked them to do something and which they feel they can't do it, but they can't say no, or they cannot go back and try to explain it. And then their mind is split and all kind of things, again. So it is absolutely fine if something asks you to do something and you find you can't do it, then it's better to clarify why you are unable to do it and explain it. And as a qualified guru, teacher, they should be able to understand why someone is unable to do that. So these are some other kind of things which related with this topic, which I wanted to kind of bring up. And also I think it is I think on practical level, I think not every teacher is Buddhas, not every teacher is Bodhisattvas. And sometimes also even the teachers, even they have the qualities that we are looking for before, but if they don't practice continuously, also they can decrease those qualities and they can be tempted by power, money, everything, and again they might lose their track. Do you get it what I mean? So when you started the relation, they were in really qualified and that track, but over the time, because they themselves didn't practice enough or continue to practice, they can be kind of distracted themselves. And so in those cases, then again, I think, okay, bye-bye, now is the time for me to say bye-bye. You are great, you are very helpful in my life when I need it in those times. And I remember that, I still keep in my heart, but now I think you are in different direction. And I don't want to go in that direction. I'm not interested in that direction. So therefore, so these are the things, I think, practical level. I think these are something I think we have to keep in our mind. Sometimes also you find, because sometimes you find, you know, once you have engage in that kind of relationship, then no matter what the teacher guru does, you try to see everything so pure, even when they are really doing bad things, you know. And so I think, again, people have struggled in that, in those situations, how to react, what to do. So I think in your heart, you keep them in your heart because they have been very helpful, kind in your heart, and that is still remain there. But now they are going in different direction. You are not, which, and so it's better to have that kind of relationship. Do you get what I mean? And if you have more questions, then you can come later. Then verse number 3, which is impermanent. This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow, follow the body, the result of black and white karma. So the first two verse on death impermanent and second two verse on karma. So now at the moment we have achieved or we have obtained this precious human rebirth with an incredible potential. But we cannot take for granted because it will not remain forever. We cannot take for granted saying that, yes, it is great potential, it has great potential, but then a lot of time we take for granted and then always thinking there is time. There is always time for the practice and always postponing till the very last moment, and it might be too late at that point. So therefore, to develop a sense of urgency, sense of need of utilizing this potential immediately without postponing it, then we try to reflect, contemplate on that impermanent. As it says, so that is by reflecting on three main points and nine reasons, 3 point to sub point to the each of them, and then the three result. So thinking that death is reflecting, contemplating, death is sudden, definite. Time of death is so uncertain. And when the time comes, what really helps us is our own practice, our own mind, our own karma, karmic seed, which is implanted in our stream of consciousness. So we try to contemplate that death is certain because it's only a matter of time before we all have to face the death. It is something, whether you like to reflect, contemplate, you want to think or not, but it is the fact, reality, which we all have to face. There is no escape from the dead for anyone, anywhere in the world, in the planet, in any other planet. And not only we cannot escape the dead and have to face it, but each moment we are getting closer and closer to the dead. It never stops. Death never stops. From the very birth, we are getting closer and closer to that destination. In some of the, whether we are sleeping, whether we are aware or not aware, it doesn't matter. It's not that when we are aware, it moves. When you are not aware, it doesn't move. It's not that when we are awake, we are getting closer, and when we are asleep, we are not getting closer. Whether we are awake or non-awake, sleep or not sleep, it's always getting closer. Whether we are aware of it or not, it is always getting closer and closer. And as if we look, sometimes the time passes so fast. 10 years move like as it's 1 year. 1 year move like as it's just 1 month. Our life goes by years, decades. Decades move as fast by years, by months, weeks, by hours, each second, each moment. And while we are still alive, if we really observe quality time that we have for practice is very limited. The quality time where we practice consciously is very limited. Of course, even though we can practice 24 hours, we can implement in every aspect of our life, but it is not easy, as we all know. Even though it can be done that 24 hours, everything we do, we can apply in Dharma, it can be transformed in Dharma, but as we know, it is not easy. It's not easy to do that. And then in terms of finding really the right conditions to really practice properly, is very limited. How many hours do we find for that practice in a day? That has been the case in the past, and that could be the case in the future, unless we make some some changes, some in our schedules. Unless we plan differently. Of course, it can always be planned differently. It's never too late. No matter how busy you are, you can always, if you plan properly, you can always manage to find proper time, quality time for your practice. It's all managing and discipline. And if we don't do that, of course, our life has gone that much and it will pass just like this again. So by reflecting, contemplating, then we think, oh, what is with that? What is important in my life? What is most important? What is priority in my life? Should it be the practice, Dharma? Of course, practicing Dharma doesn't mean you give up everything. We are not talking about that. That you change your lifestyle totally. That you all become monks and nuns. That doesn't mean that. Even if you become a monk and nun, it doesn't mean that, necessarily doesn't mean that. Still you are in same samsara and you can be in same problem, more or less. But it is about talking, practicing Dharma means working with our mind. Working with our mind all the time. Trying to minimize, decrease those disturbing, those distractive emotions. Afflictive emotion as much as possible, increasing the positive emotion as much as possible. Trying to let go of all those selfishness, egoistic mind, anger, attachment as much as possible. So this is practicing the Dharma. So with that kind of conclusion, then we come to conclusion, this life will not remain forever. It will last only certain, and then because death is so certain that I must utilize this life to make it more meaningful. Making meaningful means utilizing this to growth, for our spiritual growth, to practice, to transformations. And to be able to be help to others if possible. And then time of death is so uncertain because there's no fix in the lifespan in our life. If there's a fix, let's say everyone lives 80 years, 90 years, then we can plan better way, you know. I think it gives us more, there is more, what you call, it gives us better opportunity to plan properly, let's say. But that is not the case. Death could come any moment to anyone. It doesn't differentiate young and old. Sometimes the young goes much more faster than the old. It doesn't differentiate sick or not sick. Sometimes healthy person go before someone who is sick. It doesn't differentiate wealthy or unwealthy, powerful or non-powerful. Again, normally we have this sense of feeling of permanent, that based on our age, based on our health, based on the environment we live in, that we will live. Since we have lived up to here, we will live more. And because due to all these conditions, there is some kind of belief. And that can be a very misleading belief. as it had been very misleading belief for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people, they have, like ourselves, they have certain things which they feel important in their life and which they want to accomplish before they die. They have strong interest in that and they want to accomplish before they die. But they keep on postponing it because they feel that they believe that they still have time to take care of that. And then they are able, then they pass away before they are able to do that. A lot of people. And that can be same with us. It could be same with us as well, depending on how we utilize it. So therefore, that is one of the biggest misleading belief that we feel we have. And that belief is such that you feel, you know, when you reach 60, 70, probably you will not have that belief. But still, you still have that belief. Now your belief is not like you will live for 40 years or 5 years, but like still it is belief that I still have 5 more years, you know. Or I still have 1 more year. And even in your last stages, you still feel that you still have few months. Or there is always, you can't think that I could die today. Right moment, you still feel I have time to, I can prepare enough time there. And that is one bit misleading. So by contemplating on people around us in our lives where so many, I mean, if you look in the news, you see every day, such so much young people, healthy people dying in different circumstances and different places, much faster than their parent, their grandparent, and so forth. And then our life, the death is so uncertain because also there is so much, so many circumstances which can lead to our death, external, internal circumstances, all the time. As it is said here, it's like the bubble in the water blown by the wind all the time. The bubble to kind of not blow up and survive by all this wind is almost amazing, incredible. And in some example they give is like candle who is trying to survive when there is wind blowing from all the four directions. So in some cases, if we look, our life isn't it like that. External factors from the human and animals, where we can meet anyone, any crazy persons from nowhere. It doesn't have to be someone you have a bad relationship. You don't know any person, and someone just show up and can take away your life. Begin by poisonous, and then of course natural disasters, and then of course your own sickness. Even though we are healthy now, anytime we might come without warning, we can have sickness. We don't understand how it comes, but it comes as it happened to a lot of people. Even those who have done very regular tests, nothing shows in those tests, everything seems fine. Next day, they have some things. And you don't know how they couldn't find that before. But it happens. It happens. Sickness can come any moment, any times that we often see. sometimes we find ourselves very hard to believe, or hard to understand. Our human is so fragile, so fragile. It doesn't require a huge things to destroy the life. Very small things, flicked by a needles, bite by an ant, can be cause of death. Choking while you are eating can be cause of death. So, despite being such fragile that we are still alive, is amazing. From one perspective, if you look, it's very amazing. So, with that kind of reflection, contemplation, then since we don't know when we are going to die, and we could die any moment, any time, then we try to utilize every moment without postponing to practice the Dharma immediately. And then when the time of at the time of death, what really helps is the Dharma, our own state of mind, karma, nothing else. No matter how much wealth you have, it cannot, as there is saying in the sutras, when it comes to death, the beggar and king, they die same way. There's no difference, empty-handed. When we came to the world, we came in same empty hand, and when we go, we leave that this life, then the richest person in the world and the poorest person in the world, when they die, they go in same way. They cannot take anything. Of course, maybe they might have better facility, better bed, but once you are out of that, then no matter how many family members and friends you might have, at that time you go alone. Even they want to come together, they can't come together. We go alone. Even this very body that we have possessed from the very beginning, also that it will be separated at that moment, and we cannot take that again. And we have to take new unknown body. So, but being attached to wealth, being attached to families, friends, being attached to our body can be a very big obstacle at the time of death. Because of those attachments, then it makes our death much more painful, much more struggles. If we don't have attachment to those, then maybe we can have a much more peaceful death, less struggles, continue to the next without much struggles. But of course, when we have that kind of attachment, then that might much more difficult, much more difficult. So with that understanding, then we try to have understanding, realization that we must focus more on the Dharma and not to be attached on possessions, wealth, friends, family, and your own body, and so forth. So is. So with that, then thinking that most important is to practice the Dharma. That is the most important. Coming to that conclusions, through that meditation, contemplations is the point. So I think when we reflect and contemplate on that impermanent. For some people, it might be a little bit scary. Might make us more fear, bring us more fear. I think there can be two different levels of fear. One positive, healthy fear, one negative, unhealthy fear. What we don't want is those that unhealthy, negative fear. But the positive, healthy fear is good. I think in general, it is like this. For the animals as well as human beings, for our survival, fear is needed. That is what keeps us alive from being. If they don't have fear of others, even someone attack them, they wouldn't know how to defend themselves. But that sense of fear is what kind of helped them to survive. So in animal, let's say that is more healthy and good fear, which helped them to survive. In same way, I think there are. So the fear of death itself is not a positive, is not a healthy. Because whether you have fear or not, you can't stop the death. Anyway, isn't it? Whether you have fear about the death or not, you can't stop the death. Whether you worry about the death or not, it can't stop the death. Whether you think, contemplate, reflect on death or not, it can't stop the death. So the fear coming out of death, that I will die, is not a positive, healthy, and because it cannot be changed, nothing. It only makes just fear, that is all. But the positive and healthy fear is the fear of dying without being able to utilize our life properly. The fear of dying without being able to make our life meaningful, helpful, beneficial. That is positive, healthy. Because that can change. The other fear, we cannot change the death. But this kind of fear can help us to make our life more meaningful, more beneficial for oneself and others. So, more than the fear of death itself is fear of dying without having utilized properly, without making our life meaningful, beneficial. And if we have that kind of fear, then of course, then it will help us to make our life more meaningful, more beneficial, more helpful. And that is great. And then at the end, you have no fear of death. As Milarepa said, frightened by the dead, I run to the mountains. I escape to the mountains. Having contemplated and reflected on the dead impermanent, and the time of death is so uncertain, I achieve immortality. Now, I've lost fear of the dead. Now, I've lost the fear of the dead. Because first driven by that healthy fear, he engaged in practice. And once that, then your life becomes meaningful, beneficial, helpful. Then once your life becomes beneficial, helpful, you have so much confidence in yourself. In this life, in future life, in all other coming lives. So therefore, you have no fear of death. Because you have so confidence with your practice, with yourself. So it doesn't matter The worst will be when we have no confidence in our practice, in ourselves, because we have spent our life in such a negative way, unhelpful way. Then I think even if you don't believe in future life, I think when the time of death comes, people have fear of that, the unknown. While through they are alive, even they don't believe in future life, even they don't believe in God, hell, anything, they don't believe anything exists after the death, but I think when the time of the death comes, I think there is a lot of fear. Because nobody really knows what is there. And especially when we look back in your life and you begin, all is like flash of your life stories, everything that you did. And if we live our life very bad, then of course there's so much regret, feeling of regret, guilt, and all this negative sort of pain at the time of death. And the fear as well. But if we have lived positive life, then there is no fear. Just like Milarepa and many of the masters. If there is future life, you have taken care of it. You have created the right cause and condition to have a better high rebirth. Even there is no future life, you have no regret. You have no regret at all how you utilize your life, how you spend your life. You have no regret at time of death at all. We can die very peacefully. No regret, no guilt. So peacefully, so joy, happiness, feeling that I have done as much as I could have done, as much as I could do. I live my life fully. I live my life positively as much as I could. So therefore, so that is what I call the healthy and positive fear and unhealthy and negative fear. What we don't want is the negative fear, unhealthy, but positive fear is fine. I think it's good. It helps. It's like the fear of being, for example, the fear of being hit by car if you don't pay attention to the traffic light. The fear of being fine if you don't follow the traffic. Do you get it? That helps us to be follow the rules so that then it's more safety to oneself and safety to others. But if you don't have any understanding of the fear of being fine, or being hit by someone, or being you are hitting someone, then you pay less attention, and then there is more danger to oneself and others. Similarly, that is how the healthy fear and positive fear is similar, like that way, in that way. Because it is something that you can fix, something that you can. You are fear about something, worried about something, which can be fixed. And that contemplation, that thinking, help you to fix the problems. But worrying or fear or thinking something which cannot be fixed, and then that is kind of a waste of time, energy. So worrying about just the death and fear of death is is wasting your energy and time and everything, because that cannot be fixed. So that is the why it is unhealthy. So then the next verses, after the death, just like a shadow follow the body, the result of black and white karma follow. So, from Buddhist point of view, life doesn't stop after the death, it continues. Our body disintegrates, but our mind continues, our mind or consciousness continues, carrying all our positive or negative karmic seeds. Depending on which karma, positive karma or negative karma, are stronger, that will manifest, result of that karma, at the time of death. So then we take a rebirth according to our karma. Whichever is stronger at the time of death, whichever has been activated at the time of death, positive karma or negative karma, according to that, then we will take a rebirth. And what kind of rebirth we have, again, it depends on our karma. We are unable to make our choice, wishes, even though we would like to make choice, wishes. But at the moment, as long as we are under the control and influence of karma and delusions, we can't make those choices. Our karma and the delusions make decide and throw our new rebirth. And if, of course, if negative karma has been activated in lower rebirth, if positive karma has been activated, high rebirth within the samsara grams. If we take a rebirth in a lower realms, then again, the chances of practicing Dharma is very limited, very limited. Because the suffering, the pain, whether it's physical level, mental level, is too strong. When pain is too strong, it's hard to practice. We all have our experience. When we are mentally weak, disturbed, or when we are physically weak, a lot of pain, we cannot concentrate much. Even if we want to practice, even if we try, it's not easy. So therefore, practicing in those states is not easy, difficult. And again, also if we see the animal realms, it is so easy that the limitation that they have to practice the Dharma and for the growth of their spiritual path is very limiting. So since there is life after it's not end of the life, but there is continuity of life. And what kind of life that we have, what kind of rebirth we have, it depends on karma. So then we have to have a better understanding of karma. So then I think, then we can discuss a little bit on karma. I think since there is only 10 minutes, maybe I will leave next. So I can take one or two questions if you have, from this morning and now. Yes? Okay.
But I have a question from the first session. When you were saying about when we feel, sometimes we feel, maybe a little bit down and depressed, and if we remind ourselves of the preciousness of being humans and human rebirth, that will help. But you also said that if you go right down,
No, I don't think so. Of course, they have to see the doctors.
Okay, so you think that's
I think when they have reached that stage, they don't. The mind is not in capacity to reflect, contemplate in that way because it has become too strong. The negativity is too strong. So I think definitely they have to see the doctors in that area, that field. But once they come, once they get a little bit better, then I think that's when we can actually, when the Dharma can help again. So it can help at the very beginning when it's not too strong, from them going from deep, if they can utilize at that time so they don't go too deep. And then once they started coming, again, it can be helpful. But I think when once you are in very deep, I think it's very difficult. You have to see the doctors, I think, definitely, I think. Of course, when they are at the very beginning, when they are just starting to go, or when once they are starting to get a little better, then I think, of course, people around them, they have to encourage them, they have to remind them of all the good things they have done, positive things that they have accomplished, good things they have done in their life, and all the positive things they have, because their mind is too occupied with the negativities. They cannot focus on the good things. They forgot easily, or they don't remember, because your mind is... So someone around them, reminding them all the time of things they have done, the positive things, good things. And then, of course, reminding of the precious human rebirth and all these things can be helpful. very helpful, beneficial. Trying to... Any positive things that we can think of or remember to uplift, even if it's very small. Sometimes some of these things small, it might look small to us at the moment, but that person who is having so much depression, that small thing, good thing, seems huge. And so even finding a small things, positive, good things that they have accomplished, that they have done, reminding them of those can be very helpful, uplifting. Sometimes we might think, oh, what can I say? Because we can't think of something grand, positive things that they have done. But I think for them, even small things, just as small things break them down and lead them to that state. It's not because of huge, usually it is small things building up. And it's the same thing when you try to help them to get out of it, you have to bring with small things, building up with each one small things, and with that many small things coming and bigger, and then that give them more and more confidence in them. Even though there are some people who have just rely on the Dharma and not rely on the medications, and who have also succeeded in that, but I think very few people can do that. And I think most people, it will be very difficult when they have reached that very bottom of it. And so I think it's definitely, I think it's more safe to rely on doctors at that point. So yeah, that would be my suggestions. Yeah, yes, please. Yeah, I think one way of doing is helping them to kind of just, let's say, to calm down their mind by, let's say, doing the breathing, you know. Just help them to breathe in, breathe out, helping them just to be aware as you breathe in, breathe out. So just very simple, but very slowly. Their breath. So as their mind get more aware and focused on the breath, then their agitations and the fear decreases. The more you think about that things, then the fear or agitation increases because your mind is paying more attention on that area, and someone's mind is more aware of that and paying more attention and focusing more on that. So we try to bring that focus and attention instead of focusing on that whatever's bothering or whatever's making him or her agitating or worry. We try to bring his attention, focus, awareness to the breath. And when he or she is able to just focus on the breath, just breathe in slowly, breathe out very slowly, breathe in, breathe out. As you breathe in, knowing, being aware you are breathing, breathe out, you are being aware. If you can help them to do that, to focus on that for a few seconds, few minutes, that can calm down their mind. Because their attention you are bringing their attention back to here. So that is one simple way of helping them to do that. Another way is trying to, again, discuss some things about their values, which they are interested, which they believe in, which they have accomplished in their life, and so something positive, something helpful, which they are proud, not in negative sense, but in a positive, which they are proud about it, which they feel good about it, and just help trying to bring their attention on that focus, so there is more sense of peace, more sense of accomplishment, more sense of meaning in their life. So positive sides. And of course, again, if we can help them to have some sense of compassion, some sense of loving mind, and of course that will be also helpful, but it depends. It depends on the individual who is dying. It depends on the person who is trying to help them, the skills that they have. So it depends on the many, but if possible, help them to have to be able to die with a positive state of mind, whatever positive state of mind, loving mind, compassion mind, sense of caring for others, that kind of minds. If not, at least some kind of peaceful mind, something that they can, that they are, which they feel good about it, about something, some issues, some things. At least that's peacefulness, where their mind is less agitated, less angry, and less worry, less fears. And that can, through the breathing, can be one of the good things. And also they can, if it helps, it can be also, as you breathe in, you can, they can, you can think you are breathing in the confidence to accept this situation. As you breathe out, you breathe out all the fears, the emotional fear, all the agitations, all the anger. Yeah, you can say, like, when you breathe in, you think you are breathing in light in. You are bringing the light in. When you breathe out, you think that you are breathing out all the negative feelings, all the emotions. Again, utilizing breathing out with that kind of practice, as again, it can be helpful. Again, I think it depends on individual, you know. So, and in some people, you know, even I know, like, some people, even just listening to the, some of the mantras with a very nice music, and again, even people who are not feeling, when they listen, it give them some kind of peaceful, calm, soothing. And people, not even religious people, you know, a lot of people use those. And it is, it could be mantra, it could be some other classical music or something other kind of that, which doesn't activate and agitate their mind, but which help them to calm down and bring peace. So using that kind of another tools, this can be another tools that we can help. So I think it can, there might, there can be many different tools. Yeah. Yeah. Any? Yes, please. Oh, I forgot to. Yeah. Okay.
Session, you mentioned dedication. Dedication. So I wonder if you could just speak about how we do that, because that's something I've heard many times, and I find it easier to kind of rejoice if you had a good day and things have gone well. But to actually dedicate, it seems like there are many different reasons for your own enlightenment, for others, whatever. It seems difficult for me sometimes to have the feeling that I'm doing that properly. And you can be determined to put into practice Dharma teachings, but to dedicate your actions. Can you just talk about that a little bit, please?
Mm-hmm. I think, of course, especially in Mahayana practice, with the right bodhicitta motivations, we try to bring all our intentions of our practice for the benefit of all sentient beings, to bring to that directions, trying to bring all the energy of our practice towards that, with that kind of right motivations. And when we do the practice, we try to do, again, as much as possible, every practice that we do, to be able to go to the right direction according to the motivation that we had, in the same direction, the way the motivations that we are trying to direct. So we try to, and at the end of it, then again we try to bring whatever energy, positive energy, virtues, positive karma that we have created through that motivation and the practice itself, then again we try to bring all this energy back to the same things dedicated for all sentient beings. So therefore, again, it's a tool. One way of looking is a tool that from this you try to go to the same directions with the motivations, and then with practice you try and dedication again you are bringing to the same. So always reminding yourself at the very beginning, at the middle, at the end, why you are doing this practice, for what purpose you are doing, for all sentient beings. So that is how the dedications and motivation and the practice, because then at the very beginning we have that, and sometimes we might lose during the middle, and sometimes we are the first in the middle, then we might lose at the end. So it is practicing how to bring every beginning, middle, end, everything at the same direction, at the same things. So in a way we are reminding ourselves that we are, our purpose of our practice, or we are trying to do, is in the same direction all the time. So that is that will be one. And then, of course, as it's explained, that when we dedicate and share the merit for all sentient beings, then the merit, the virtues, positive karma cannot be destroyed by the anger or others. Wrong view and so forth. If we don't dedicate for bigger purpose, then it can be destroyed by those negative energy forces. So therefore, again, if we dedicate, it explained, like for example, it's letting a drop of water in the oceans. If you let one drop of water in the oceans, then that part of water will remain there as long as the ocean remains there. In same way, if we dedicate for all sentient beings, all the virtues, that then it's countless. Your virtues is like the one drop of water in the oceans. So therefore, it cannot be totally destroyed by those negative energies. So, and same if you dedicate for fully enlightenment, until you achieve enlightenment, because this for all sentient beings. So therefore, it is a way of reminding ourselves all the time that for that purpose. Secondly, it helps us to maintain the virtues we have created, so that it doesn't be destroyed by those negative energy forces. Thirdly, it helps us to kind of not only maintain and sustain the virtues, but to actually increase it by dedicating for more sentient beings. Then you are increasing the level of the virtues in that way. So it serves many purposes, and so therefore. And of course, when we talk about the dedications here, we dedicate to have a higher rebirth, not for your good, not for yourself, but for a higher rebirth, so that we can continue our practice, so that we can be achieve fully enlightened, not for oneself, but for all sentient beings, not just for oneself, but for all. So therefore, dedicating to have a higher rebirth in the futures and continue to get better and better life after life, if we don't make much progress in this life. Of course, if we can make a progress in this life, that would be great. But even if we don't make huge progress in this life, at least so that we can continue the practice and get better in future life and life after life, so until we achieve enlightenment, so that for that, then we dedicate to have a higher rebirth as well. With that kind of motivations, yeah. Okay. Chanjo semjo rembo je magye panang ke kyo je kewa nyamba meba yang kongle kongdo bewa sho. Thank you. We try to transform the food into nectar, and then in nature is a nectar, but in aspect of many, all the food that you can imagine, fill with the whole space and make an offering to the Buddha Dharma, Sangha. Mm-hmm. Oma hum, oma hum, oma hum. To the precious Buddha, peerless guide. To the precious Dharma, peerless refuge. To the precious Sangha, peerless liberator. We offer to the three jewels of refuge. The food with 100 flavors, attractive and well prepared, is offered to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas with devotion. May all living beings enjoy the well food of concentrations. Seeing this food as medicine, we eat it without attachment or hatred, not out of avarice, pride, or a wish for an invisible body, only to strengthen the body.